Okay, you are tuned to KDNK. This is KDNK, commercial-free since 1983. I'm Marilyn Gleason, your host this afternoon on Valley Voices, and today my guest is Joe Van Wyk. And I am saying that right, correct? Okay. I forgot to check that out before, but we actually met in the Glenwood Springs pool a few weeks ago, oddly enough, and I found out he had a book on photography, The Mindful Photography Field Guide, which we're going to be talking about today. And also, Joe is going to be doing an event here in Carbondale tomorrow afternoon or evening at the Carbondale Library. A real great hands-on winter event using photography and smartphones, going out for a walk, and capturing things that sparkle. So thank you so much, Joe, for joining me this afternoon.
Hey, Carbondale friends, Roaring Fork Valley people. It's good to be here with you. Yeah, we're doing a little event at the library here in Carbondale tomorrow evening. And it's going to be based on a practice in my book, The Mindful Photography Field Guide, 15 Smartphone Photography Practices for Inner Peace. And we're going to be doing some holiday sparkles. Yeah.
Nice. There's a lot of sparkle out there right now. I've seen some snow in my wanderings where there's just this amazing hoarfrost. So you have these huge kind of leaves almost of sparkly snow that really picks up the light. I did want to start out just asking you where you got started in your photography career. And really that started right here in Carbondale. You were a student at Colorado Rocky Mountain School.
Yeah, it sure did.
Once upon a time.
Yeah, it was, so I graduated from CRMS here in Carbondale, and when I left Texas to come up to go to school here, I was fortunate to do that, and my dad let me abscond with his camera, and so I just fell head over heels in love with photography, and they had a dark room at the time. And, you know, I didn't call it mindfulness back then, but I remember now this was kind of the roots of all of this. I realized that when I was practicing my photography, that I wasn't really thinking about my problems and I could get just totally immersed in it. And, that was kind of the genesis of this book.
Yeah, I did photography over the years as well and went to another boarding school in Durango where we had a dark room where I first kind of got intrigued with it. But I was thinking when thinking about this interview that, you know, in the past, before digital photography and before smartphones and smartphone photography, photography really invited us to slow down and pay attention. Everything from the tripod that you would set up and put the camera on and really think about, you know, what that frame was, what was in the frame, what was out of the frame, to waiting for your pictures to come back, maybe in the mail from Kodak, or maybe, you know, 3 or 4 days later from the Photoshop. So it has changed so dramatically in that way from being expensive. Film was expensive, which meant you didn't, you know, you thought about what you're taking pictures
of. That's
right.
It wasn't like motor machine gun fire, you know, taking photos like we do today. Yeah.
And there is this tendency. I mean, people are taking pictures everywhere. The world is full of pictures and images. You know, there's all the selfies. So it's really dramatically changed from, in general, you know, from something that we really slow down, take time and pay attention to, you know, we're just carelessly snapping pictures all the time now.
Yeah, you can look at that in two different ways. I think about that in current times, and I know that it might sound ironic that I'm talking about mindfulness and smartphones in the same sentence, but really our smartphone cameras, first of all, I'm just huge on smartphone photography. I'm so blown away by this technology and just absolutely love it. But the first rule with mindful smartphone photography is that we have to turn our smartphone into just a simple camera. And we do that by turning it on airplane mode. So that's a real big part of the intention, the setting out and saying, okay, I'm going to do a practice now. I'm going to set my phone on airplane mode and I'm going to just get immersed in the project at hand. But the whole thing about, you know, older technology, I like to laugh like, whether it's film or even a big, you know, digital camera, and I do professional photography, so I have plenty of that kind of gear. It's still the process from pushing the shutter button, even with a digital camera, to actually sharing that image is, oh, it's real simple. It's only about 50 steps. You know, it's ridiculous how cumbersome that is versus our amazing smartphones. And so I think that it can be a tool for mindfulness and mental health. It's just all how we use it.
Tell me a little more about your background as a photographer.
Well, like I say, it started back when I was very young, always interested in photography. I have a long career in graphic design and publishing. And 10, 15 years ago, I started to do photography professionally and videography professionally. So I did come at it from a professional angle. And in fact, part of what I would do, I was living in Austin at the time, and when my professional photography career started to really take off, let's say 10 or 12 years ago, I would go downtown in Austin a lot to, quote, practice my portraiture. So as a result, I built up a following on my YouTube channel. If you could check me out on social media everywhere at Joe Van Wyk, JoeVanWyk. So if you search for that on YouTube, you'll find me. But you'll find some videos that I produced with a GoPro on top of the camera, and I would approach people in the streets and ask them to take their photograph. And so this showed POV, kind of that interaction of me doing that. And unfortunately, simultaneously, I was going through the worst depression of my life. Really, really dark time. But I would be able to summon up just enough energy and willpower to get off the couch and go downtown and practice like this. And I swear, after these encounters with these people, and being just fully submerged in creativity like that, it would just completely change my whole mindset. And that's when I started to really make the connection, started to get into meditation at the same time. So that was a big part of it too. But all of this came together to form this book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about mindful photography and mindfulness, and what does it have to do with photography?
Yeah, that's great. Well, to me,
let's first just define mindfulness.
Exactly. Yeah, that's, and you'll get a lot of different replies to that. But to me, it just really means awareness. It means that I'm aware of what's going on. Whether that's, it could be, you know, I'm mindful of my thoughts. But really, to me, the form of mindfulness that's really helped me is a very active, engaged form of mindfulness. Now, I did it a little earlier today. I just did it. Set my little meditation timer for 20 minutes, sat on my butt, closed my eyes, and let it rip. Go for 20 minutes and not get up. And that is a discipline that has probably been life-saving for me. So that's a very sort of still form of mindfulness. But the active form of mindfulness can be when we are out and about, and it may be that we're up in the forest or that we're, you know, having a creative endeavor. But what makes mindful photography different than regular photography is that we try to really be dropped down into our senses and to be an exercise for presence rather than an exercise on, hey, I'm going to share this on social media. I really caution people in mindful photography that the steps are focus, capture, and then shine. And the shine part is to shine our light and bless others. So I really encourage people for this process, instead of taking our creation that we shoot in our mindful photography practice and to just, oh, let me put that on social media and get a lot of likes out of it. Let me share that with somebody just one-on-one. Let me write my son a love note. You know, I come across a few photos from when he was a child, and maybe it's his 8th birthday party, and I have 30 photos of that still. maybe I whittle that down to kind of a sacred few and edit them just right and send those to him with a love note of how much his dad loves him. That feeling, I think we're wired that way to love others. And so that's very much part of this process. When we get wrapped up in our own depression and anxiety, it can be a very isolating thing. So that love aspect and connecting with others and shining our light so others can see is a huge part of my healing from struggling with emotions.
Well, you have made a few allusions and references to this, that that part of your path has been, you know, there was a difficult time and this creativity, photography, and art turned into something that was, you know, part of your healing and recovering from that. Would you like to talk a little bit about that path, that process?
Sure, sure. Like, whoever's listening right now who struggles, and I mean really struggles, with depression with a capital D, anxiety, and they're two sides of the same coin, I just want you to know, first of all, that you're not alone. You're listening to someone right now who's been through the very depths of hell, struggling with depression. About 10 years ago, I was in the grips of it, of suicidal depression. And I'm open. It's a hard topic to talk about. Who wants to hear about that? You know, especially, you know, it's a late afternoon. I want to hear something cheerful. But we all know either we've been through it ourselves or we have loved ones that have gone through this, and it really is a prison. And the terrifying thing for me was that I had run out of options. I mean, the psychiatric establishment, they had nothing left to give me. There wasn't another category of medication or therapeutic technique or more talk therapy that was going to help me. I realized that I was at the end of my rope and I had to learn how to cope with these overwhelming emotions that I was having. So this is when I really learned that I have to take responsibility and learn how to be resilient with this. It's hard work.
Say more about that.
Well, first of all, to sort of the work that it takes to move forward in this, let's call it, fight for our lives and for our mental health and emotional well-being. The reason why it takes so much work and that people like me don't have the luxury of taking that job lightly is because it is such a powerful thing to shake. These neuropathways are so strong, and the way that we've reacted and usually bailed out, tried to check out or bail out or whatever our problems, and it sort of anesthetized ourselves and our problems. That's what we're talking about here. So that part, that influence on me and some of these realizations came through a therapeutic practice called dialectical behavioral therapy. We've heard of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, typical talk there. DBT is for the sort of the people who are beyond, quote, beyond help, like the worst kind, the worst of the worst, like me, that don't respond to medications, to typical therapy, that really struggle. And so the statistics are shocking. Worldwide, I think there's in the neighborhood of 700,000 suicides a year. Guys that look like me, white males, 30% of the population, 70% of the suicides are white males. So if you see a white guy walking down the street in Carbondale, if you happen to see one, give him a hug, please. men, suicide at, I think, 4 times the rate of women. So there's something going on there. And I'm not sure I have the answer to what that is. But another thing that I'm so open about is both the S word, suicide, but also my faith. I'm a lifelong Christian, and that's great. And I wrote this book. I wanted this book to be therapeutic techniques for people no matter what your belief system is. We're all just a bunch of calico cats of religion and spirituality and beliefs. So I wanted these practices to work across all of that. And so what was super helpful for me is to turn them into either it would be a practice that you might go out and, hey, I'm going to do the face towards the sunshine practice. And tomorrow morning, I'm going to hike up to Mushroom Rock and do that. But there are also practices that allow us to intervene when we're going through a really negative thought spiral. Hmm. And that's what would happen to me. I'd be in the grip of some obsession and it would take me down and put me in the ditch. And so I very much designed these to be interventionary therapeutic techniques that help in situations like that.
It sounds like you have found a connection between creativity and healing, really, and kind of getting out of yourself and your own mind. And that's been a very real kind of path for you.
Yeah, it sure has. And the beautiful thing about it is that, you know, quote, the religion of my childhood, I had really run out at the worst of those times. I had run out of solutions there too. It's not like my religion and my Christian belief failed me. Maybe I failed it or whatever, but I definitely had run out of solutions with the talk it through, study the Bible, remember, you know, scripture, listening to sermons, et cetera, et cetera. I was not finding relief that in that area. But funny as it is, here I was in Austin at the time, 10 years ago, and I came across this church in Austin. There's a bunch of Christians who also meditated. And they were big followers of something called centering prayer. And lo and behold, right here in this valley up at the monastery in Old Snowmass is Father Thomas Keating. So ironically,
who was kind of the founder of the centering prayer.
That's idea. Right. Mm-hmm. So these Trappist monks in the 70s were seeing all of these meditation and all this Eastern influence coming in. And they're like, we got to come up with something like this ourselves. So the result was centering prayer. And
so it's sort of the mystical wing of Christianity,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, it sure is.
Yeah.
Well, the book is
The Mindful Photography Field Guide, and you have 15 practices for peace in it. Tell me about one of them.
Okay. Well, if you show up at 6 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the Carbondale Library, and by the way, you can find more information on that on mindfulphotography.org. We're going to be doing a little variation of the very first practice in the book, which is called Chase Things That Sparkle. And now that kind of comes out of a funny story because there's, you know, people kind of diss chasing things that sparkle. You're not supposed to go out and chase things that sparkle. Get serious, right? Mm-hmm. So the chase
the
things that sparkle.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah. That came out of a marriage counseling session. And I'm no longer married, so you can kind of guess how well that whole thing went. But I remember the therapist said, pointing to her and you know, he said her name. He said, you'd rather be working, and Joe over there, he'd rather be out in the field chasing things that sparkle. So the Chase Things That Sparkle title of that practice is kind of a middle finger towards any therapist who thinks that we would rather be working than chasing things that sparkle in a field, right? But in terms of that, I've tried to, through all of these practices, go deep for sure, therapeutic techniques, but also I've tried to impart some of what I've learned about photography throughout the book. And the most influential photography teacher of mine, a guy named Thorsten von Overgaard, this Danish photographer, I remember him talking about follow the light, follow the light. So that really changed everything about photography for me. So, You know, imagine that you go out and instead of just looking for a subject, oh, that's interesting, that you start to tune your eyes into following the light.
Photography really is, in the end, all about light.
It is all about light.
But I love that follow the light as, I mean, it's kind of a motto for life, right?
Yeah, everything. I mean, it's definitely a metaphor for life. I mean, the world's tough out there. If we cannot follow the light that we emanate and shine that on other people, if we can't notice the beautiful things that are sparkling in our lives, you know, it's tough, and we've got to be able to do that. So this, you know, have you ever heard of your reticular activating system?
Nope, new term.
Your RAS. The RAS is at the bottom of your brain stem, the top of your spinal cord. And it's the filter, basically. So this thing about us talking about, you know, pink monkeys, what is that? Okay, there's a green, you know, whatever, avocado over there. Let's talk about green monkeys. I swear by sundown tonight, you're going to find a green monkey out there. A green monkey is going to pop out at you. So when we start to tune into things like that, our mind, the reticular activating system, that's our filter, it's filtering out everything. Everything's blending together. But that's the reason why you talk about something and then voila, you see that thing.
Okay, so is this a really complicated way of saying whatever I'm paying attention to in the world gets bigger?
That's right. What we think upon grows. In fact, I'm going to give you right now, Marilyn, I'm going to give you a gift, okay? A wealthy benefactor in Austin, in Aspen, rather. He donated a bunch of cameras, and they're, you think your camera's nice on your iPhone, like your 40-megapixel camera? This is a 400-megapixel camera that I just handed Marilyn.
It's a slide frame. Yeah, so it's a little square with a hole in the middle that I can kind of.
So anyone over, you know, several decades of life knows what a slide frame is. You know, you pop your 35-millimeter slide in there and project it up on the wall. But they make sometimes, yes, if we want to do a mindful photography practice, we put our phone on airplane mode and away we go. But sometimes I just want to leave the phone at home, and I'll pop one of these in my pocket. And so the point is, something interesting happens when you throw a frame around it. And these, they're made out of plastic. They're so great to just slip in your pocket. But to go around and do a mindful photography practice with one of these, and you know the shutter button on this thing? You know what the shutter button is? It's blink. So I'll just look. It can be a wide angle, put it right up to my eyeball. It could be a telephoto way away. And then when I see something I want to take a photo of, I just blink my eyes.
I wish you folks out there could like look into the studio and see us playing with our little slide frames. But I wanted to ask you, what are some of the common mistakes that photographers make when they're going out there, you know, with their smartphones, and some of the fixes for those mistakes?
Well, first of all, God put our eyeballs side by side for a reason. So every once in a while, try turning your smartphone horizontally and shooting a landscape photo. I know it's tempting. The buttons at the bottom of the screen, click, 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 vertical photos, but try taking some landscape photos too. Even if it's of, you know, your child and you want to take just a headshot of your child. You don't always have to do the whole body. It may be that it's more revealing to do a headshot and get some context on your left and your right. I mean, I know that for now it's hard to believe that this form factor of a smartphone is going to change, but with the Apple goggles and all of those things and the panorama that we see with our eyes, I think that horizontal landscape photos are going to really, you know, they're going to
be back.
It's going to last the whatever that it's going to pass the test of time. So that's one thing. And another thing I would tell you is, when you want to take a photo of someone, whatever you do, don't say smile or don't say something ridiculous like say whiskey or whatever. Those things don't work. They produce photographs of your kids with their, you know, flashing their teeth like they're, you know, monkeys or something. instead of telling people to do something, evoke a reaction out of them. And what I do, so one of my jobs, one of my gigs is I'm the marketing coordinator for the city of Glenwood Springs Parks and Recreation. So I get these incredible opportunities to photograph people having joyful times. And so one of my techniques is if it's a group of people or a single person, I might just say, hey, look at me. I'm willing to make a fool out of myself, right? So look at me. Okay, ready? Nope. Don't smile. I don't want you smiling right now, okay? Just relax your face.
I'm smiling.
In fact, you know, I'll say I'm going to turn my face towards away from the mic. You know, get those muscles moving, you know, shake it out, get them moving and stuff. And then I'll say, okay, you ready? Now, shake your butt. Come on, shake it. Shake your shoulders. Come on, get you moving. So by that time, they're laughing. They're into it. I mean, everybody's loosened up. And so while that's the key thing is while that's happening, you've got your finger on that shutter button and you just pop, 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 take lots and lots of images. So you have a lot to choose from.
Yeah. Great advice. Tell me about what's happening tomorrow here in Carbondale.
Been wanting to do this for so long. I'm excited and I'm glad the weather's going to be nice for us. So I'm going to do a kind of a short version of the presentation. I'm not sure how long. It's probably 30, 45 minutes max. And at 6 o'clock at the Carbondale Library. So we'll be in the conference room there. So I'll go through sort of a formal presentation. It'll be fun. Frankie the Doodle will be there with us.
I was going to ask Frankie the Doodle.
Yes, that was Frankie, if you look out the window.
Who's Frankie the Doodle?
Frankie the Doodle is my companion. He's been here in the valley with me since I got here 5 years ago. And he's just a precious, precious golden doodle. He's my favorite subject. So I'll be doing a little presentation there, and then we're going to walk around and do a little mindful photo walk and, quote, chase some holiday sparkles.
And it'll be after dark.
It will be after dark. So we're going to catch some, you know, I hope we're able to walk downtown and kind of go by the storefronts. And I'm going to show people, you know, it may seem obvious at first, but I'm going to show people the different materials, different angles, different lighting situations where things really do sparkle.
Is this for kids or adults?
This is for both. I hope there are plenty of kids that show up. Parents, I know the following day is maybe their last day at school, but you know what? If you'll bring your kids and they'll be exposed to this, then they'll have these practices to do over the holiday break. And when they're driving you nuts, you can just send them outside and have them do a mindful photography practice.
Yeah, and remember this photography, this using the phone, is a way of getting in touch with that creative self, slowing down, paying attention, maybe even meditating a little.
Absolutely.
All right, well, thank you so much. We've been talking to Joe Van Wyk, and he's going to be at the Carbondale Library tomorrow starting at 6 o'clock. It's, what, about an hour and a half?
Yes, sir.
Some inside and some outside and getting to know your phones. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Looking forward to it.